You're listening to the North Avenue Lounge on WREK Atlanta. You're listening to the North Avenue Lounge. I'm your host, Amanda Plum. Each week, we talk to interesting folks from around Atlanta about the interesting things that they're doing. And it's getting to be warm outside, which means it's popsicle season. So today in the studios with me, I have Stephen Kars, founder and CEO of King of Pops. Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah, it's a busy time of year for you.
It's getting there, yeah.
I appreciate you making the time. I'm not sure if you're a loyal listener to the North Avenue Lounge or not. I'll just assume that you are and that you know that I like to start all my interviews at the very beginning because, as Maria Von Trapp says, it's a very good place to start.
Sure.
So where are you from? Where'd you grow up?
I was born in Minnesota, but I grew up in Snellville. I went to Shiloh High School and then went to the University of Georgia after that.
As a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
As a kid, I think I wanted to be a professional soccer player. I was decent at it, but certainly not that level. I was a realist as well. So,
did you play like in high school?
Yeah, I played in high school.
In college?
Didn't play in college, no.
So at what point did you realize you weren't going to be a soccer guy?
I'm in high school.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe before.
So what did you become?
I was a journalism major. I wrote at a newspaper through college, and then for the first year after college, I went out to Idaho and worked at a small newspaper kind of near Jackson Hole. It was awesome. I could ski in the morning or snowboard in the morning and then didn't have to be into work till 2 and then work till midnight or 2 a.m. or whatever and do it again. So it was certainly an interesting time in my life. It was awesome though.
So you're like a ski bum journalist?
Yeah, more journalist with aspirations of being a ski bum.
Mm-hmm.
And you certainly are at the income level pretty much of a ski bum. So it works pretty well.
Did you have a particular beat?
Mm-hmm. If you think about Idaho, I was doing sports, so it was like rodeo, then football, and I don't know, like high school sports, really. It wasn't really the big time.
So at this point, becoming a popsicle mogul was not really...
I never considered it at this point, though. No.
Really? So tell me the origin story of King of Pops.
Sure. So I eventually left the world of journalism for a job at AIG, which is a huge insurance company. Basically just financially motivated, I could make a lot more money. So I moved back to Atlanta, and I did that for about 2 or 3 years. And during that time, I was visiting my oldest brother who lived in Panama and was working on his thesis. And Does he have a name? Yes, his name is Ashley.
Hmm.
And he introduced us to the paleta, which is the Spanish word for popsicle. They had these little push carts, and they were everywhere. And it was an amazing product. Fresh fruit, interesting flavors, as opposed to our popsicles that are generally like corn syrup and water, some type of sweetener.
So you're right. You're trying to tell me that like fresh fruit and sugar is better than corn syrup and water?
That's my personal opinion.
Controversial.
Yeah, controversial.
I think it's not a call-in show. We might get a lot of callers.
Yeah, so I have that controversial outlook on frozen treats. And so I decided, this is pretty cool. I eventually got laid off from my job at AIG, and instead of getting back into the exciting world of insurance, I decided to give this a try. I didn't really have a ton to lose.
Were you already thinking that you wanted to go into popsicles before you got laid off, or was it really you got laid off and you're like, now what am I going to do with myself?
It's kind of the thing you like sit and might have a beer and talk about, just kind of daydreaming-like, but I hadn't made any real plans until I got laid off, and it just seemed easy at that point. Like, there was really nothing to lose. At the very worst, I waste a year of my life, and the startup cost isn't really that much. I mean, you can get everything you basically need for about $4,000 or $5,000, which is a significant amount of money, but it seemed like it was worth it.
So had you already tried making popsicles at this point?
No, I hadn't really ever tried until after I got laid off. I mean, I probably had. There's no moment that I can remember, but there's probably at some point where I did freeze something
right
that could have been considered a popsicle. We made a lot of smoothies growing up. I think that might be where our inspiration for combining fruits came from. My mom was really big into smoothies.
So that's interesting that you hadn't been like playing with a product at home and said like, I've got something. You had the idea before you had the...
That's true. And kind of the one big thing behind the product is it's not really something you're supposed to overthink. Like, I recognize there are certainly super amazing chefs that can do amazing things. And there's some amount of talent that goes into making a popsicle, but we try to use as few ingredients as possible. So we're not trying to complicate things. It's usually like 3 to 5 ingredients. And if you use really good ingredients and you combine them in a way that makes some type of logical sense, it's going to be pretty good.
Cool. So tell me about how you got started.
Well, I wanted to have like a little shop, but quickly learned that it was not within my financial means. So we decided to do
who's
a push
we?
Cart. Me and my group of advisors, which I don't know, basically me and my brother. My brother was a lawyer at the time. He had just finished law school and was a prosecutor in Gwinnett County.
Does he have a name?
His name is Nick. Yeah, he does have a name, it turns out.
Your parents named all three of you.
I actually don't have a name.
Oh, that's awkward. So I called you Steven earlier. Where did that come from? Is that just a euphemism?
It's a nickname, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so we got a push cart just basically because we couldn't get a store. And it just happened to coincide with this food truck thing that was just barely beginning in Atlanta. It had kind of already become popular in L.A. and New York and some of the big cities.
This is like 2010?
Exactly, 2010, yep.
I haven't done my research.
It's actually April of 2010.
Oh, that's like the anniversary.
Yeah, we just turned 5.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So yeah, so we got this push cart kind of just out of desperation. I remember the first couple days it had a different company's logo on it because we bought a used one.
What was the logo?
La Constanidad or something. I think it meant dreams, but
what
luckily this isn't a call-in show because someone that speaks Spanish would tell me that that's not true.
What were they doing?
They were selling popsicles, but not in Atlanta. I think it was from Dallas, maybe.
So, like, was this like a Craigslist buy?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah. You weren't worried about it, like, having bad karma since they'd gone out of business?
I was worried about it, but I didn't have many other options, so.
It's like
it was
the short
one of,
sale.
Like, yeah, it was like, of things I was worried about, not super high on the list, but
what
I was
worried
concerned about it. Mainly when you make something for the first time, like you said, I hadn't been working on this for years, and you hand them a product that they paid money for, you're pretty nervous that they will enjoy it. Even beyond that, in the beginning, just that they won't hate it. It's always a little bit nerve-wracking, still is today, when you hand someone something. And
no, you're not nervous today when you hand someone a popsicle.
Yeah. I am.
Really?
Not like nervous. Like, people don't like them. There has been times in my life where people have said, hey, I don't really like this, and we'll figure something out. But
how did you make your first batch? Did you do this at home, at a commercial kitchen? You can, like, admit the truth, because no one's going to go after you now.
Now, everything was pretty legit once we actually opened. We purchased, there's these machines that freeze popsicles faster, and it's important to freeze them fast because that improves the texture. So, like I said earlier, the ingredients are the only thing that matter. The process matters too, but I just did a lot of research to figure out like what to do and spent a winter kind of practicing it. They use a 220-volt power source, so you can plug it in like where your washing machine is, or your dryer actually, because it's the same size plug. So that's the first place we made them, was in my brother's kitchen, and then when we started, we had a shared kitchen at the Irwin Street Market.
So did you do a lot of like tasting parties with your friends before you started selling
them? You could call them parties. It was more like I'd froze a bunch of stuff in medicine cups, and it's like January and really cold, and everyone's kind of sick of me talking about it. I do get fairly fanatical about things, so it's all I really care to work on, and other people are kind of like, all right, well, now let's go on to the next thing that we're going to do tonight. And I'll be like, but what about this flavor? And that was fun, but not for everyone involved.
So your first location was at Buddy's, which is at the corner of Highland and North Avenue. How did you end up there?
It's pretty close to my house. I'm really familiar with the area. It's actually pretty much equidistant between myself and my brother Nick's house. So it's just an area we were familiar with. It seemed just walkable enough, just drivable enough. The owners there were pretty nice. Just kind of worked out.
Did you like pay them rent?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like I said, we had originally been wanting a shop. So they have like this thing, there's an emissions shop there now. So we had envisioned having a store there. It was just going to be way too much. And so we had already had this relationship with the owners there. They were kind of nice. So I at least proposed the idea of, hey, maybe we could set up a cart. And then the rest is history. The carts kind of are the key to our business at this point. If we had a shop, we probably never really would have done the cart. So we really got lucky.
Do you remember your first day with the cart?
I do. We didn't have a truck yet. I eventually borrowed a truck from my dad, but the first couple weeks I didn't have a truck. So I pushed the cart up there, and I remember passing these construction workers and them kind of, hey, what do you got in there? I'm just kind of ready for them to make fun of me a little bit. And I told them the flavors, and they were maybe like a little bit too out there, like pineapple, habanero, tangerine, basil, like no, just straight strawberry. So I learned a kind of an important lesson then, because the next day I just came back with whatever they said they wanted because I could go make it that night. But anyway, pushed by those guys, got to the corner, sold. We had painted this mural, so there was a few people that had just been kind of interested in general. And then the
first... You did a mural before you even opened?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that.
We did that like in February, yeah.
I didn't realize that at all. I feel like I'd seen the cart before I saw the mural.
Nope.
But I'm gonna take your word on this one.
Pretty sure.
Your memory might be better than mine.
Yeah.
King
so
of
the
Pop's
mural
history.
Was there. So some people were interested. And then also just like when you're from an area, like your friends are going to come out and support you. So for the first like week, it was kind of a myriad of people that ranged from my parents to some friends to a few people that were actual customers to this group of construction workers that I spoke of earlier. That's kind of one of the cool parts, is that all these groups of people that seemingly would not like the same thing kind of started talking and getting excited about it. And they were really a big inspiration because they came up with ideas and had flavor ideas and places that we should try to sell and different things that certainly shaped the business.
So when you started, did you start with a set group of flavors, or were you expanding right from the beginning?
Yeah, I mean, there's some of the ones like banana pudding and pineapple habanero, chocolate sea salt that we had from the beginning. But the idea was always that the flavor list would be constantly evolving. So there's been new flavors added every week since we started.
Cool. Yeah. We'll talk more about the flavors later. So you had the one cart.
Mm-hmm.
Was it just there, or did you take that other places as well?
Yeah, we took that to several other places. Eventually, like once we could afford it, we basically were just buying things. I was living on my brother's couch, so when I made money, I would just basically buy the next thing that was going to help the business grow. There was really no luxurious lifestyle that I needed to maintain, so bought more carts, bought a bigger machine eventually that year, and just kind of kept growing. But we started out in one spot, and then like literally friends and family would just work the cart kind of for fun, because it's pretty fun, especially, I mean, people come up to the popsicle stand, they're usually not in a terrible mood.
Yeah.
They're in a space where they kind of want to be happy. So it's a lot of fun to work. I mean, maybe not if you're working 7 days a week, like 14 hours a day, but for a nice 3 or 4 hours in an evening, it can be pretty fun.
How long before you got your second cart?
Maybe like a month and a half. The carts aren't super expensive and they're really simple. So there's nothing in them other than basically a stainless steel box with wheels on it, and then you put dry ice in it to keep it cold. So I think we had the next one within a month. I can remember May Day at Serenby, and that was in the beginning of May, so we started in April. We had two carts because I went down to that festival and my brothers were working the corner. I remember running out of pops and was having a celebratory beer by myself, kind of thinking how awesome this was that I only had to work a half day and I'd made a couple $100. And they get a call and they're like, hey, we're out of popsicles and these people are kind of upset in a weird way. Like, so we're taking them back to the kitchen and we're going to scrounge up whatever we can find in the freezer, but we need to start making stuff. And like, that's kind of the moment that I always stick with in my head, that like from there it was nonstop. It was like staying up till 2 a.m. making popsicles and then waking up at 8 a.m. to package those popsicles and then getting out the door by noon to go to an event. And like really, really just absolutely probably as hard as I could have worked.
Awesome.
For a while. With a lot of help from other people too.
Tell me how you guys got the name King of Pops.
I think my friend Chris Casmus in New York was sitting at a bar with me. We had decided to do what is now named King of Pops, but hadn't come up with a name, and we were just really brainstorming. So we came up with this long list.
Ooh, what were some of the names you didn't pick?
Frozen Man was
not
one.
Good.
Freya was one.
Sounds really hippie.
Yeah. Those are really the only two I can remember. But I know there's a long list. We had like a Facebook vote, and Freya actually won. And we said, I don't think that's going to be the name.
I need some new friends on Facebook.
Yeah. So I changed all my friends on Facebook and had the vote again with just myself. And King of Pops won.
Do you identify as the King of Pops?
I don't choose to identify that, but it is, I will say, I would be lying if I said people, it's just like people don't really know people's names. So I think they think like they're kind of being funny, and then they also just don't really have to know my name because I'm wearing a shirt.
Well, you don't really have a name.
Well, yeah, I was also not named. So
you're kind of like
can't
Prince,
blame him.
Kind of like the popsicle guy formerly known
as a symbol.
But I mean, like, I mean, people recognize you on the street because you wear a crown while you're selling popsicles, right? You're that guy.
I get recognized like within a quarter mile area of where we started. Some people will recognize me. But other than that, and actually it's embarrassing because you'll talk to someone every day, and maybe not every day, but like four times a week for like a season. Someone comes up there with their kids like after school a lot.
Someone's getting four popsicles a week.
There are moms that come up there. There's a lot of people that
but
come up there
like
a lot.
But they're not like good moms. These are like the bad moms that are...
No, these are the best moms ever. And you'll then see them in a different context. Like, say you're at a restaurant and they walk by or you're walking in. You'll be like, hey, how's it going? And they'll look at you and they'll just be like, who are you?
I'm sure people do that to you, though. Because I feel that way, like, when I see someone, like, an improv person that I've seen on stage and I see them in real life, I'm like, oh, yeah, we're great friends. And I realize, like, oh, I don't know this person. I just stared at them for, like, an hour and a half.
Well, my general reaction is, like, even if I don't know you, I'll kind of just pretend.
Yeah, like when we said hi out there, you're like, oh, yeah, you.
Did I do that?
No. So have you ever gotten any complaints from the Michael Jackson estate?
No, there's really no product confusion. If we tried to sell music, I think it would be a major issue.
Is that going to be one of your future ventures?
Hope so.
King of Pops Productions?
Bad singing.
Exactly. I hear there's like an audience for that. All right, well, we need to take our first break, but we'll be back and we'll talk more with Stephen Karse of King of Pops.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out while listening to Atmospherics every Monday through Thursday from midnight to 1:30 a.m. on WRAK Atlanta, 91.1 FM.
You're listening to the North Avenue Lounge. I'm your host, Amanda Plum. Today with me in the studio is Stephen Karse, the founder and CEO of King of Pops. So we were talking a little bit about how you got started in the spring of 2010. Where were you selling back then?
We were really selling anywhere that would have us. So we started at North Avenue, North Highland, which is just a gas station corner, essentially. We got into a farmer's market or two pretty quickly. And these street food things, there was a few events popping up. I remember being at Super Jenny's. That was one of our first spots. She kind of let us set up near her and would include it in one of her meals. I remember that as kind of one of our first good customers. But yeah, really anywhere that would have us, we would give anything a shot. We still really do that. Like if something seems like it's going to be decent, we'll go out and try it because there's not a ton to lose and then see if it works out.
I'm curious about how you figured the business part out. Did you have a business background? You were an insurance guy, journalist, ski guy.
Yeah, no business background per se. Always been like, I guess, on top of my personal finances and aware of it. And I mean, like we talked about the world of journalism before, I basically left that job because I was trying to ski at an expensive resort and not making enough money to justify it. So I've always kind of been pretty good with money. But the business part, I hate to say it, is just kind of common sense, but it really is. It's like, I know that even if I buy really expensive produce, and I don't really count my time for anything because that's all bonus money that I'm going to get anyway, that I can sell a popsicle for more than the fruit is going to cost me to make it. And once you figure that out, then, I mean, that's all you really have to know. And then the more you sell, the more money you're able to make.
All right. So once you know popsicles cost more than fruit, you can start a popsicle company. All right.
Yep. That's the basic concept between you and me, though. Don't tell everyone that.
Yeah, no. I mean, there's no trade secrets going into this conversation at all. How did you learn about food safety and what you had to do to keep people healthy and
yeah, I mean, the government puts a lot of things in place where you don't really have a choice but to learn about it. So to be able to get an agriculture permit, which is what we have, they inspect your kitchen. You have to have SafeServe certified training. I'd actually worked in food a little bit before. I know I said journalism, but I did work at the dining hall in college, so I knew a little bit about.
Do they know where you are now?
And stuff.
Like they could maybe have like a plaque to you in
the
dining
hall.
Yeah,
that would be cool. I worked the omelet. I was really good at making the omelets and the sandwiches. Flipping omelets is still one of my favorite things, and I'm sure to tell everyone that I learned this while working the omelet station at the University of Georgia.
So now you're like in several different states and you're all over the place. Tell me a little bit about how your growth went in the past 5 years.
Yeah, it was pretty naive. I mean, I think we found immediate success in Atlanta, or relatively within a month we had found pretty good success. And we were working really hard. And a friend of ours was like, man, I want to do this, and I want to move to Charleston. And we were like, this is amazing. Why would this not work? And it has worked. Charleston is now a successful part of our business, but it just wasn't as simple as it seemed. We hadn't figured out what was successful in Atlanta and what wasn't and why things were succeeding. And I wouldn't really claim to currently know exactly all of those things. So like I said before, when we were just kind of buying a cart when we could afford it, we were doing the same thing with most opportunities. If it seemed like we had a good partner, a friend of ours that really wanted to go open a business in another city, he was willing to kind of take some of his time and risk that to see if he could make something work, then he would go and do that, or she would go and do that. And yeah, that was the process, pretty simple.
So what cities are you in now?
So we started in Atlanta. The first city we went to after that was Charleston, Richmond, Charlotte. We're in Greenville and Athens. Yeah, I don't think I forgot one. We're in Savannah, kind of.
Are those franchises, or are those part of your company?
It's part of the company. So we're all one company. They've got kitchens in those cities. They have a manager that is kind of like an owner. Like, they have like an owning interest, but we're all under the same company.
Can they come up with their own flavors, or do they have use your recipes?
Yeah. Everything is pretty much, even the recipes that we use daily, some of them might need to be tweaked, because if you get strawberries that are more sweet or less sweet than the batch before, you have to tweak it. And then, yeah, they certainly come up with their own recipes. So the seasonality is so much different that, like, peaches in South Carolina come out at a different time than here, and berries. And in Richmond, they have a whole different array of fruit that we might not get locally that they can get. So,
wait, what fruit does Richmond have that we don't have?
I knew you were going to say that. They do have a black raspberry that I don't think I've seen here, but I'm sure that it is grown by someone here. But the climate's different. I mean, it is different. So if it isn't actually different species, which I guess that there are some things that Richmond can grow that we can't, or maybe vice versa, that we can grow and they can't,
well, that I'd more believe. Likely. Yeah. So I did take some questions on Facebook for you.
Yeah.
And my first question is from Kara, who I met at my friend Allison and Franz's wedding. She wants to know, when are you opening a place in Charlottesville?
Charlottesville has a pop purveyor called Pantheon Pops, if I'm not mistaken. My oldest brother, Ashley, who we spoke of earlier.
One of the named Karst brothers.
He's named, yeah. He is right now at UVA, but about to leave there this year. I love Charlottesville. Open to any ideas, but it's not on the calendar at the exact moment.
All right. I mean, you guys got really popular in Atlanta, but you've also gotten a lot of national press. Tell me about the first time you got like a really big press hit.
Yeah, so the whole getting laid off from AIG thing was a good national angle, and CNN happens to be here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're based in Atlanta, it turns out.
So weird.
So yeah, some people that were just kind of fans decided to run this story, and it was, I would assume, a big part of our success early on. They did a story basically about getting laid off, and kind of a feel-good story about how, when bad things happen, you can try to make something good out of it. And then the way I think press kind of works in general is they see something and it all just kind of piggybacks, and a lot of momentum can build from that. So we got on a bunch of different shows. And
not the North Avenue Lounge. We like to be like 5 years late and then do an interview.
I've been trying to get on this show.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. I'm sorry I haven't been returning your calls. So what were some of your biggest challenges early on?
Biggest challenge is just like, how do you turn this from something that I'm doing into a business remains a challenge. Do you want it to be like something where I'm doing 100% of the work, or do you want it to be an actual business that could exist, like if you had an off day, for example?
You don't have off days?
I do now, but like in the beginning, if you have an off day and you're a one-person business, then things obviously just don't happen. So figuring out how all that stuff works. It's just endless questions. Like, the equipment that we purchased was all from Latin America. So getting it was hard. And then when it breaks, fixing it is hard because no one's familiar with it. I think it's just challenges every day that you couldn't really have imagined, and then figuring out how to solve them. But not really one glaring obstacle.
Someone else had this great idea for product, not popsicles, but something else. What kind of advice would you give them about starting a business?
The advice I would give is to pick a date at some point in the future and just start at that date. And what I mean by start is like, put whatever your idea is in front of the public, because when you keep things to yourself and you try to build it to this perfect whatever, you aren't taking into consideration the millions of things that you don't know about. So although it can be hard, once you put something out there, you will learn a lot about it and you will get guided by and pulled along by whoever your supporters might be.
Can you think of an example that that happened to you?
Yeah, I mean, basically everything we talked about was not in my original plans. So,
what was your original plan?
My original plan was to have this one standalone shop, which we don't even have a shop at all. So we have these carts now, which is what we're identified by, and we're now able to go to events throughout the area instead of kind of being limited to one spot. But yeah, I mean, and the same with flavors. Like if I thought that I was going to come out with this dozen flavors that I had worked tirelessly on the recipe and would never tweak it based on feedback that I got from people, I think it would have not been as successful.
But you do kind of have a shop now, right, in Inman Park?
Yeah, we have our production facilities in Inman Park right off the Beltline. We were like, man, this is an area with a lot of people walking around. So one of our windows, we just put a counter on the front of, and now you can open it up. But you can't, like, walk in.
Right.
But so you can walk up.
So it's like a walk-up window. Right.
Yeah.
So tell me about your production today. What does that look like? I'm assuming you're not staying until 2 in the morning.
Yeah, I mean, popsicles. It starts pretty early in the morning, cutting fruit and kind of prepping for the day, and then they'll freeze kind of the second part of the day. So we had, like I was saying before, we have these machines that can freeze very quickly. So if you imagine like a hot tub, this is like the opposite, a cold tub.
Yeah.
And it circulates ethanol, which can't freeze. Like if you have vodka, you can put it in your freezer and it doesn't freeze. Same idea. So you have this liquid that is minus 30 Celsius that's circulating around the product, and it just freezes it very quickly. So that's how the machines work.
So how many do you make a day?
It depends on the day. So like if we have a big festival like Bonnaroo or something coming up, then we would make maximum. We can make like almost 10,000 a day if we're really staying like late at night and going hard. And then if it's like January, then we would make 200 in a day or something. So it,
wow.
it really varies based on what's going on that week.
And how long do they keep for? Like how long would you guys keep them before you have to sell them?
Yeah, if you have them at home, they're fine. Like they're healthful for years. Once you freeze something, it will be fine. But we try to churn all our product in less than 2 weeks. So if we're making it to go out to our carts, then it's usually made within the last 3 or 4 days. If it's at Whole Foods, then it sometimes will sit there slightly longer. But you'll be able to tell just by, we don't use preservatives or stabilizers, so you'll be able to tell when the product ages. It's just not something that can hold up really well for long periods of time.
What's the oldest popsicle you have?
We donate them to the food bank. When we kind of build them enough, we'll take them off to the food bank. Or sometimes we go to the skate park and hand them out or different things. But I don't know. I've had old ones because in my personal freezers, they'll just sit in there and they're fine. But they're not what you would sell.
So you mentioned winter earlier. Mm-hmm. What do you do in the winter?
We go on like a company trip at the end of the season. So we have like our field day, which is like our thank you to the community. And then after we finish that, like kind of the staff goes on a little trip if we had a good enough year, which we have in most years.
Like where do you go?
We've gone on like cruises, like 3-day cruises, which has been pretty crazy and really fun. And, you know, they go to cruise destinations. I don't know. It doesn't really matter where you go. You just are kind of like, oh, it's warm and we're not working. So that's fun. And then
there's like a week or so where like you can't get popsicles in all of Atlanta.
Like my dad doesn't go on the cruise. I think he would fulfill orders and stuff. I mean, there's people that make things happen. It's like the people that worked all year, like the full-time workers that go. And there's usually like the next aspiring King of Pops superstar might not get to go if they were part-time that year.
This is how you like prove yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. If you can handle it for the week when we're gone.
But I think it would be really dramatic if there was a week without King of Pops every year and just remind people like how much they like your pops. I mean, like maybe you want to make that a thing.
Yeah, we do have a flair for the dramatic.
Yeah.
No one might notice, but we'll do it anyway.
I don't know, like maybe you could get on like CNN and be like, this is like an
urgent guys, you cannot
issue.
Get a popsicle today. No matter what you do from us, we will not give it to you.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
It's like, especially because I know sometimes you do days where you're just like giving them to mm-hmm. everybody for like a birthday or something.
There's
so maybe
no
this
price.
Be the opposite. Like,
yeah,
that would
no
be
price
the price
you
pay.
Can, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So what else do you do in the winter?
Travel. I try to see somewhere, get out of here for a little while and relax. It's hard to relax in Atlanta if I'm going into work. It's not that I don't enjoy it.
Have
I
you
certainly
been to Jeju?
It,
it's really nice there.
I have.
It's
it
really
is
relaxing.
Very nice. You do kind of feel like you're just floating away.
I mean, I think it's like Duluth, but so you can't relax in Atlanta, but you could go to Duluth if you needed.
I'll try that this winter. Just go to Duluth for my vacation.
But in the winter, you know, there's still popsicles being sold like in stores. Mm-hmm.
And we go to events. There might be an event that we're at. And if it's 70 degrees, like sometimes it is in December, then we'll go out.
How big of a difference is it between winter and summer?
Say our season starts like essentially middle of March through October. We probably sell 85 to 90% of our product in that period. And then the winter we sell maybe 10%.
Wow. Do you like lay off people?
No, but that's why we have like, we do have like this huge seasonal staff, and then we've got full-time staff. So the full-time staff is like 15 people, I think, and then in the middle of the year we might have 60, 70 vendors.
Yeah. All right, we need to take another break, but we'll be back, and I want to talk to you about your different flavors.
Okay.
All right. You're listening to the North Avenue Lounge on WREK Atlanta. Thanks for tuning in to the North Avenue Lounge. I'm your host, Amanda Plum. Summer is coming up. It's time to talk about popsicles with King of Pop's founder and CEO, Stephen Kars. Tell me what happened to your mural. It was so pretty.
The mural was very pretty, but unfortunately I had it permitted as a mural, and it was the
an
city.
Ad.
Yeah, the city came out. They when the gas station that we're at changed from a Citgo to a Chevron, the sign person came out, and they're like, hey, what's this big sign doing that shouldn't be here? And so they decided that it needed to be painted over immediately.
That must have been a sad day.
It was very sad. I was in Mexico, and my mom called me. She's like, Steve, I'm trying to stop these guys from painting it, but I don't
think
I can.
Did your mom, like, chain herself to the Citgo or something?
She's like, what do you want me to do? I was like, I don't know. She's like, they said it's going to be $100 a day. I was like, just let them. They should just paint it.
You're, like, calculating. That's, like, 34 popsicles.
Yeah.
So how do you come up with your flavors?
It's a pretty collaborative process, and also an very informal process, so I wish there was something more fun to explain, but basically we will go to the market.
What market?
We go to the Atlanta State Farmers Market a lot, but we also just deal with local farmers and pick up whatever we think seems interesting. We might have some ideas, but we get back and...
So wait, you don't have a shopping list? You're like, what's in season today?
I mean, we do. Yeah, we know, like, we know we're going to have to make a ton of strawberry lemonade because that one's going to sell a lot. We know we're going to have to make a ton of chocolate sea salt because people really like that one.
What is your most popular flavor?
Most popular flavor is the chocolate sea salt, the banana pudding, the raspberry lime, strawberry lemonade. Kind of the more safe-ish flavors are the most popular flavors just because kids are buying them. And then also sometimes you just don't want to have something interesting or crazy.
What's your favorite flavor?
My favorite's the banana pudding. My favorite refreshing one is the tangerine basil. I really like the blackberry ginger lemonade. Mm-hmm. My list can go on.
I'm more of a pineapple habanero fan.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the thing, is the ones that are milk-based, I feel like would be better in the winter.
They would be, yeah.
But I don't feel like on a hot day that I'd want them.
Yeah.
And maybe I associate you guys with hot days. This is actually from Shannon Alderman. She says, what were your flops in terms of pops? What's your test kitchen like? And how do you research, create, test new flavors? For some reason, I have Harry Potter in my mind right now when he was trying out Birdie Bot's every flavor beans. And will you ever come out with a bogey flavored pop or something strange sounding for the adventurous types?
That's a lot of questions. Yes is the short answer. I think we will.
Okay.
A type.
There will be a gross flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys made an intentionally gross flavor yet?
Scout Mob did this thing with that pill you take that changes your senses.
Yeah.
So we made one that was designed for that. They got to taste like the normal ones and see what it tasted differently. And then we also had one that was kind of like really intensely sour and bitter. It tasted pretty good with that. So we have made a quote unquote gross one. But if you have, I think it's just called like something creative like the magic pill, then it tastes pretty good. But yeah, I mean, we've had flops. I think we made an avocado fennel one that was someone's idea that was pretty gross.
Did you fire that person?
No. Well, that's the thing. Like, when you make them, there's just not that big of a risk, because if it's bad, then maybe wasted like 30 pops or something. But
and it could be bad for morale to like fire everybody that has a bad flavor idea. They might be less,
they'll
like be more.
I'll go on the record with saying we have not yet fired anyone for making a bad flavor.
Tell me about the popsicles. So you have fruit-based ones and milk-based. Is that the two types?
Correct, yeah. So you have like the ones you talked about that are going to be really refreshing, and those usually are the water-based, fruit-based ones. Good for a hot day, more refreshing. And then you have the creamy ones that would be better at night, like maybe after dinner or during the day, whenever you want. But
someone asked me which pops are vegan and are there plans to make more vegan flavors, but most of them are vegan.
Most
right?
of them are vegan, yeah.
Because what do you guys use to sweeten them?
We either use, well, sometimes we do use honey.
Mm.
But we also use agave nectar and organic cane sugar.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I put a line on my board and the ones above it are the fruit based, below it are the milk based.
You're saying on your board, like when you're selling.
Everyone kind of has their own style, you know. This is what I do personally. And then if people ask which ones are vegan, I typically say the ones above that line. But then I have to add the caveat if they seem especially interested in being vegan that bees may have been harmed in the production of one of them.
You know what you could do? A V with a circle around it.
It's
like universal sign for vegan.
I know.
You know that one?
Yeah.
How many flavors do you guys have?
It's a common question with, I don't know, maybe like 400 flavors. But so let me just tell you an example. We could have strawberry lemonade, it's strawberry lime, blackberry lemonade, blackberry lime, blackberry ginger lemonade, blackberry ginger lime. So like if you think about it, Subway's got like 15,000 combinations. It's not really that as impressive. It's still impressive, but.
So how do you decide like what you're going to make and what you're going to have out? Because obviously you don't have all 400 on any given cart.
Yeah, so the cart, we kind of came up with the number 7. Usually has 2 to 3 milk-based ones and 4 to 5 fruit-based ones. Like you said, kind of the fruit-based ones are more of our calling card. And we take out kind of a nice mix. We like to have something adventurous. We like to have something safe. We like to have one with herbs. There's kind of a little bit of a formula to it, but also it's just based on what's in season and what we have in stock.
Who makes everything?
I'm in there. There's a group of people that are in there pretty much every day.
I mean, like, I worked at an ice cream shop. We had, like, these are the ones we have to have in stock every day, and here are the ones we rotate. And so we'd make sure we had enough of the ones that we were supposed to have in stock, and then we got to pick a couple of flavors that we want to make. How do you guys decide, like, what's going to get made on Thursday?
I think at this point it's similar. There's, like, a this is what we kind of need to have, and then this is, like, the free-for-all area where you could just go a little bit crazy, and you have to make maybe, say, like, 50 to 70% of these ones that were, like, we know these are popular, proven flavors, and then we'll use the other percentage to kind of experiment and try to come up with new stuff.
Is there any flavor that's on, like, every cart?
Pretty much chocolate sea salt's on every cart.
All right. I don't know if I've tried that one. I think I have. All right. Let me go to some listener questions. And by listeners, I mean friends of mine on Facebook. Julie Bottom McCartney wants to know, what are some failed flavor combos? So you mentioned the avocado fennel. Any others?
We did a fig and goat cheese one. That didn't work
that
very well.
That sounds good.
It's just a texture issue.
Was it the fig was the problem or the goat cheese?
Probably more the fig. It's like they're so mealy.
What was the base?
It was like a goat cheese ice creamish base. Yeah,
okay.
It was very heavy.
Are milk-based ones, do you consider those ice cream or not?
I don't, but I mean, there's literally no difference. Usually ice cream has like what's called overruns. When you're creating the ice cream, say you had 1 cup of milk and you made that into ice cream, it might turn into 1.5 cups of ice cream or 2 cups of ice cream. So that's how it has like that light fluffiness. And pops don't have any overrun, so it's more dense. That's really the only difference between it and ice cream. But yeah, I mean, I still call it a pop personally.
Okay. Eric Meadows wants to know, are there ingredients that you would love to use but can't due to cost or low supply?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to use like Sublime Donuts and do like a coffee and donuts one with them, but it would be hard. It would just be hard to source. We actually could probably do that. I don't know. There's a lot of things that you kind of have to take into consideration. There's a lot of farms that have amazing things that they produce it for like their specific customers, and they just don't want to sell all their stock to us and things like that. But yeah, that just does come into play.
All right. He also wants to know if there's any flavor combo that was amazing but was shelved because no one bought it.
Yeah, that happens a lot. I'm trying to think of some examples, though. Some of my favorites just don't sell, and there's really nothing you can do about it.
So Catherine Moore says, Elvis flavor, colon, peanut butter and banana. Has that ever happened? Can that happen?
It has happened. We have to be careful with peanuts just because there's so many people with that allergy. And once you start using nuts, then you have to basically exclude that group. We've kind of
or
chosen...
Or burn down the kitchen and start over.
Or burn down the kitchen and start over. So we've stayed away from peanuts to date, but it is a tough decision because it would be, that's certainly an awesome flavor.
All right. Asha Leung wants to know, will you make stevia sweetened pops?
We have before. So yeah, we will. Sure.
My mom says salted caramel, question mark.
Yeah, we make it.
Do you make straight up salted caramel or is it just the chocolate salted caramel?
Oh, that's different. Yeah, salted caramel is a flavor we make. Yeah.
All right, Betty Plum, next time you come for a visit, we'll find some King of Pop salted caramel for you. We always have to go to Morelli's whenever she comes. She's like addicted. So cool. I'm trying to think if I have any other ones. Kara wants to know if you have a focus group of tasters, and can she be one?
No focus group, but sure. Come on by and purchase a popsicle, and you can be a taste tester.
You can taste as many as you want. Cameron wants to know, why was he not that into me that one time we were talking about pineapple habanero pops outside of the East Side Lounge?
It was me in particular?
Apparently.
Well, Cameron, I am very sorry, but maybe I was having a bad day. I don't know.
I mean, there's no other reason.
I would seemingly love to talk about pineapple habanero with Cameron, especially.
You mentioned it's a fun place to work before. Do people get like a lot of digits? Like, if you're a King of Pops vendor, are you like guaranteed to get hit on?
Yeah, 100% guaranteed to get hit on.
Is that like part of the benefits package? Like, you get that and probably
A ring, probably.
I was going to say sunburn.
And a sunburn.
But you say a ring? Like, yeah. It's like, so anyone looking to get married really just needs to get a seasonal job at King of Pops?
Correct, yep. Cool. No, it is a really fun way to do different things. Like, you go to some random things that you wouldn't have actually wanted to go to, say like a Burning Man themed bar mitzvah. But once you're there, it's pretty fun.
Is that like the wackiest place you guys have sold?
Well, that was like a catering.
That
it's
counts.
Probably one of the wackiest I've been to tell you the truth. It was very awesome.
Yeah, cool. One of my friends does want to know if there is a Queen of Pops.
Nope, not really.
Is there anything else you want to talk about in terms of flavors?
No, I just want to ask you what your favorite flavor is.
I told you, you weren't listening.
I know, but I want to ask you again so I can listen this time.
I like the pineapple habanero.
Yeah, you already told me.
And
that.
Do you guys do another spicy? What are your other spicy
ones?
Yeah,
we do a habanero margarita. We do a mango habanero, which is very good. If you like the pineapple, you would like that
one. I would like that. I don't think I've ever seen that.
The Mexican chocolate is a little bit spicy. Have you had that?
But I don't like the milk ones.
Yeah, but you asked. I'm just kind of telling you what
I mean,
answering the question, basically.
The milk ones always remind
me
of,
not curating the
like,
answer just for like whatever you like.
They remind me of Bill Cosby's pudding pops.
Yeah. Why does that have a bad place in your...
No, actually, those marble ones. So they're like the chocolate and vanilla marbled. I don't know.
Those are good.
And they always had that like thin layer of ice that would like kind of crack as you were looking at it. Do your milk-based pops have that?
Mm-mm. You should give them a shot one day.
I will. Maybe I will. But maybe not in the summer. Maybe I'll do that like in the winter.
It's spring, right? Is it summer yet?
No, it's still spring.
So you could, by definition, do it in spring.
Yeah, I also like the ones that are like mojito kind of things or things that have herbs. Like if they have like
that's fun,
a blackberry basil mojito, I'd probably go for that if you didn't have pineapple habanero.
Yeah, and what's interesting about that is say you've got like a mango mojito, completely different consistency because a mango is so thick. And when you blend it, the mint will be throughout instead of the other ones where it's at the bottom. So that's kind of a fun fact.
So we're going to take another break, and we'll be back for our final segment with Steve Kars from King of Pops.
Get your weekly cup of Joe. Hear banjos and country, folk, bluegrass, and American traditional on Back Alley Pork Roost, Sunday nights at 9. Only on WREK, Atlanta.
Thanks for listening to the North Avenue Lounge. I'm your host, Amanda Plum. Today with me in the studio is Stephen Kars, founder and CEO of King of Pops. So I was looking on your website, and it says that the goal of King of Pops is to provide an ecologically responsible, fresh, all-natural frozen treat in a fun neighborhood environment.
Wow.
Does that sound
familiar? Inspiring.
Yep. It just gave you like chills. So tell me about the environmental and ecological aspects of your company.
Sure. We use local products first. That's the most important thing. After that, we focus on organic, all-natural products. But for us, the most important is local.
Why?
We want to support the community, first of all, and then also just the toll that it takes to have things shipped around the world is something we'd like to try to avoid. And every decision that we make, whether it's what type of shipping box we're going to use, is it recyclable, how can we be a responsible business? I mean, I think just having it in the forefront of your mind is a big step.
What about your packaging?
There's a new recycling center. If you want to save up all your packaging or give it back to your kind vendor that accepts that film, it's actually a pretty tough film to recycle. You can't just throw it in your everyday recycling bin. But if we collect it, it will go to be recycled. Or if you want to take it to this plant in Grant Park, you can as well. We tried a compostable one that was made with corn, but it wasn't protecting the product very well. So unfortunately, we couldn't go down that angle.
Can we compost the little sticks?
You can compost the sticks.
Or use them for our projects. You could reuse them.
Yeah, I'm more into upcycling personally.
What do you do with your popsicle sticks? Do you have a lot of popsicle stick art around your house?
Mm-hmm.
You really?
No, not really.
Really?
I'm sorry.
How do people not make like cat's eyes for you all
there's
the time?
There's a woman that makes belt buckles out of them, which is one of my favorite uses. I don't know if they're used ones or not, though.
You guys kind of have like a cult following right now. Do you have like weird like fan art or weird King of Pops fans?
Yeah, we have a lot of interesting fans for sure. I think a birdhouse has also been made out of the sticks while we're on that topic. The Walking Dead producers and some people came by the other day, like on our birthday, and gave us some swag type stuff. That was pretty awesome.
Do you watch?
I don't watch, no. Mm. But I'm big fan still of you guys' work.
That's interesting. I am a fan. I do watch. So if someone from The Walking Dead is listening and wants to be a guest on my show, I will like let you jump the line. You know, Stephen had to wait like 3 years, yeah. 5 years. But
approximately 5 years, yeah.
Yeah, Walking Dead. Daryl, give me a call. I don't even know what we're talking about anymore.
Ecological. I mean, we also started a farm last year.
Tell me about your farm. You bought a farm last year.
We bought a farm last year. It was actually a nursery when we bought it, but the plan being to grow a lot of our own produce, the herbs and the ones that you like, and also berries and melons and all the wonderful fruits that can grow here in Georgia to kind of add to what we're already purchasing locally.
So what do you guys have in the ground right now?
We've got strawberries in the ground. We have mint and basil in the ground. We also have like kale and...
kale popsicles?
Well, those won't be popsicles. So we learned some things about farming. I thought you could just grow whatever you want, but some things just take a long time. So we're conditioning the soil with some vegetables to start with. So there's quite a few vegetables right now as well.
Did you bring a farmer on, or are you just
figuring
it out?
There's like a group of people out there working every day, which is awesome. It's like... Eventually, we would like to have people out and have events and stuff, but we're not quite, it's not quite to that spot yet.
So are you using some of it in your popsicles already, though?
We're like a week or two away from when we will. Yeah, the strawberries haven't started coming out. Like, there's been like a handful, but not in a quantity we can use, and the herbs are pretty much there, too. So along with the farm, there's also a nursery that's focusing on southern native plants. So instead of like the type that you would get at Walmart, it's plants that are made to exist here in Georgia. So they'll use a lot less water, and they'll just be able to exist without fertilizers and things like that. And it's just a really fun place. Really, we want, and it's kind of the same thing when we go to a farmer's market, it's really easy to kind of feel like the local food movement. It can be like isolated a little bit, and we really want it to be accessible. So we want this farm to feel like fun if you're into local food, or if you just want to have fun. Like, we don't want it to be like this pie in the sky, turn your nose up type of place where you have to be a foodie to come out. We really want to teach people about growing their own food and having really good food.
Do you think you guys will be able to produce cheaper there than you would be able to buy it from local farmers?
No, it's certainly not really going to be cheaper. We're incurring a lot of costs just to get it started, but eventually it'll be essentially the same price as what they're doing. We want to create a business that can exist. It's important, I think, if you're going to create a local farm, that it is a sustainable business and you're not doing it out of the goodness of your heart. Otherwise, if we can't make that work, then the whole idea is never really going to work. So it's important that it's a financially sustainable business. It's more of a way for us to show the community what can be done and an opportunity to do that than anything else. And then, I mean, hopefully we'll be able to break even and maybe make some money.
And I heard you guys are going to be at Turner Field starting this year.
Yeah, so we started with the Braves this year. We're kind of have the carts positioned at a few places, and then we're also going up and down the stands, hawking, as they call it, like beer guys and cotton candy guys. I actually, in college, was a cotton candy vendor, so I've got a lot of experience of walking and kind of staring at kids and being like, you want this, right?
Yeah, so it's really about getting the buy-in from the kids, and that they get the parents into
it. Yeah, you get eye contact with the kids. They kind of whine to their parents. Their parents look at you like, why'd you do that? And then you sell them the product. Or sometimes they just are all harmoniously wanting the product too.
I was in New Orleans recently, and this clown came up to my friend's daughter and like basically asked her if she wanted a balloon animal and just started making it, you should just like give it them the popsicles and like after they lick it, then be like, hey, mom and dad, fork over the money. Like,
yeah,
if you want to be like really aggressive about it.
Yeah, we try to go after what we call good profits, so profits that you're proud of. And I don't think that would fall into that category.
I'm just saying, I'm just trying to give you some free business advice. If you don't want to take it, that's fine. I also heard you guys have a musical about you coming up.
Yeah, Dad's Garage.
What's that?
Dad's Garage does a lot of improv, and then they also do a couple scripted shows per year. And out of kind of nowhere, they decided to do this. And it's a post-apocalyptic musical about King of Pops.
Do they have to get the rights from you guys to use King of Pops?
I mean, it wasn't very hard to get the rights. They just had to ask us.
And you're like, but, sure.
Yeah. Cool. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be pretty hilarious. I think that it's like this underground food truck group that is going kind of after the corporate types that have taken over the city. And I think it's pretty over the top and silly and should be pretty awesome.
Are there going to be popsicles available?
Yeah, you'll be able to buy pops at the King of Pops musical. It's currently out, and I think they have it on for like 4 weekends in a row, so you should have plenty of chances to see it.
Do you have like a walk-on role?
I don't. No, they didn't ask me to do a cameo or anything. The guy that plays my character is supposedly a very good singer, though, which I'm happy with.
Are you a good singer?
Terrible singer.
So they didn't get that exactly right for the musical.
Well, it's a musical, so it would be a really bad musical if all the characters were bad singers.
But it'd be more true to life, you know? It'd be more like a biographical musical.
Mm-hmm. But there might be a genre that is waiting to come out called biographical musicals that you could, along with, what was your other idea you had for me earlier? Make things, have the kids just lick the product and then sell it to their parents.
Yeah, it's kind of like a, you know, you break it, you buy it. You lick it, you buy it kind of policy. I mean, I feel like you should have one of those anyway. Earlier you mentioned King of Pop Field Day. What is that?
King of Pop's Field Day is like our thank you to the community at the end of the year. So we usually have some type of fundraiser that we're raising some money as much as we possibly can. But we give out popsicles and we have a lot of games and...
And bands?
There's bands.
I heard the Crying Clown for the first time there.
Yeah, Puddles. Puddles Pity Party is there. I hope he's there every year. We can only hope.
So that's at the end of the year? That's like October?
Yeah, it's at the end of the year. It's like a thank you to the community, but it's also like our employees kind of come out and have fun. And it's a really, really fun, silly, silly thing. Like we have a dunk tank sometimes.
It's almost like a little tiny festival.
It's like a tiny festival. It's
a
like
a big, big party or a tiny festival.
Yeah, it's like you go to the festivals that I love, like Inman Park Festival or any of those, and they're just like, you kind of know what you're going to expect. Ours is like, if you put on a festival, this is kind of what it would be like. It's like, yeah, you're right. It's like a big party where we're kind of trying to be like a festival, but we don't really know exactly what we're doing.
I always thought when I heard Field Day, though, I kind of expected to be doing like the Dizzy Bat Relay. Or
oh,
like,
yeah, well, they do that.
Do they?
You just are probably, what are you doing?
Dizzy,
we have egg toss. We've got three-legged race. We've got sack race.
You're making this up. Does that really happen?
Yes, that really happens. Charlie Graham is always the ref every year.
I've missed the games at the Field Day, and I've been 2 or 3 times, so that's weird. Okay,
it's about half of the space.
I still don't know if you're making this up. I don't believe you.
Well, if you only come late at night, like for the last act.
No, that's not what happens. Huh? Last time I was there, I was trying to trade beer tickets for popsicle tickets because I like popsicles a lot more than I like beer. Are there other ways that you guys like to give back to the community?
Yeah, well, there are several ways. We have a yoga class every Tuesday at 7 p.m. That's
why? Why a yoga class?
It's a lot of people. Several, I think we had 300 people last week. Some are good at yoga, some are not good at yoga, but it's just a good way for everyone. It's right off the Beltline, so everyone kind of comes by, and some people just have towels and are like wearing jeans, and other people are like professionals, you know. So we do that. We just really want to activate, so that's important to us. And then as far as helping out, we do a lot of fundraisers for groups that have kind of are looking to raise money. We do a lot of stuff with the food bank. That's kind of our main fundraiser, in addition to just the pops that we're not going to sell. We also donate money. And yeah.
Cool. We talked a little bit about what you do in the winter. What happens when it rains for you guys?
We luckily always have to kind of be making the pops, so that's one thing we're always doing, whether it rains or not. But we'll cancel events. I mean, basically, if it's raining and we're going to be outside, if it's going to rain for an hour, then we'll go. If it's supposed to rain for 4 or 5 hours, then we kind of won't be there. But yeah, it's just, a nature. It's the nature of the business.
The nature of nature. But doesn't that have like a big impact on you guys? Because, I mean, I heard this supposed to be a pretty rainy summer. And this, you know, in April, we've had like weeks of just like nonstop rain. We thought we like moved to Portland. And
yeah,
that
I thought
must
we had moved
hard.
To Portland.
And Portland is not where you want to open up a popsicle stand.
No, it was, I think the rain certainly plays a huge impact on our business, but there's nothing you can do about it. Like, for example, say you pay $1,000 to go to an event and then it rains. Well, it doesn't really matter. So, yeah, it's just that's just part of the deal, basically.
So you guys are in how many states?
Four.
So you guys are in four states. You have a farm. You have a musical. What's coming down the road for King of Pops?
We have a little distribution company. We're going to have 10 brands that are all brands kind of aligned with our values. We already deliver to a lot of places around Atlanta, so we're going to take them on and help them grow as well.
Like different types of products completely?
Yeah, so one's called Banner Butter. They make cultured amazing butter. We've got one, Due South Pickles. We've got Honeysuckle Gelato, Pure Bliss Organics. Garlic clove. They do like pilafs and different prepared dishes.
Okay, so like instead of like a record distribution company that would like take different bands' records and get them into places, you guys are taking like different local
artisan brands. Yeah, and we're kind of trying to help them grow. They're already successful on their own right, but I think like with our powers combined, can be more successful.
Cool. Any other projects coming up?
Oh, man, there's probably a lot, but I think we've covered quite a lot.
Okay, here are some random questions about the job. What happens, if someone is at one of the carts and they have to go to the bathroom, what do they do? Really, you haven't figured out the bathroom issue?
No, I know what we do. They either hold it or else they close their stand for a few minutes and... Like, if someone's around, they'll say, hey, can you watch this for a second?
I'll give you a free popsicle if you watch this while I go to the bathroom.
Yeah, so maybe if you stand around long enough, someone will have to go to the bathroom.
Just give them a lot of water.
isn't that good? Water.
I asked you earlier, before we started the interview, if you had any interest outside of popsicles, and you said you didn't?
No interests.
But I heard you're actually really good at ping pong.
I'm not interested in it, though. It just happened. No,
I have some interests.
I like ping pong. I used to be really good at it. We started a tournament at church.
The bar, not the religious institution.
Yeah. Well, whatever you want to call it. And I used to like be really good or thought I was really good. And then now if I go, I basically lose to everyone there. I've stayed the same and everyone else has gotten better.
Yeah.
But there's other things. I mean, I like to cook. I like to travel. I like to... do cool things like that.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
I do have one final question that I ask all my guests. This is a question that, I mean, you know, because you're a regular listener.
I already have been preparing my answer for 5 years.
All right, just tell me your answer.
Cornbread.
Okay. So the question is, my brother-in-law, Kevin Hernandez, thinks there's two types of people in this world, whack-a-mole people and skee-ball people. Which are you and why? Cornbread.
Skee ball.
All right.
Because, I mean, I other than I haven't really ever played whack-a-mole, is that correct pronunciation?
Mm-hmm. Whack-a-mole.
I know what it is.
Okay.
But I feel like skee ball, you're a little bit more in control. I feel like you could get a bad draw in whack-a-mole. In skee ball, you really control it. I mean, you're rolling. There's really, if it's outdoor skee ball, there might be some wind or something, but it's really just up to you to succeed.
Where's their outdoor skee ball?
There's not.
All right. So if someone were interested in, like, they're listening to the show and they're like, man, a popsicle would be really great right now. Is there any way a person like that could figure out where to get a King of Pops at any given time?
Yeah, we have a website.
What?
It's kingofpops.net, and we keep a schedule updated. And then other than that, like all the social media outlets, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being a guest on the North Avenue Lounge.
Thank you very much. It's been a long time coming.
And thanks to you guys for listening. We're here every Monday at noon. And if you want to listen to this or past episodes, they're available on our website, www.northavenuelounge.com. Thank you and have a great week. Thank you.
Thank you.